Especially for some of the
the only thing is, if there's one, I can't see that. See that one?
Well, that's right.
Wendy, I love your background picture. Where did you take that? That's so cute.
Sorry, my microphone was up. I took it off the internet. I didn't take it.
Down here. That's what I was like. I've got my back to everyone.
Right, that's true. And then I got my computer up with it, and you can see, we can see.
Yeah, I think that view is much better than me having my back to all of them.
Okay.
That's weird, right?
Yeah.
Hi. Yeah, this will be much better.
Perfect.
You won't get to see them. This is the comment. Very familiar.
Yeah, it's tricky. So I have 12:17. I want to call us to order. Hi, my name is Andrea Hanlon-Ma. I am the chair of the Employee Assembly. So this term for the next few months until we pass the baton on to the next excited candidate. We're going to switch things around a little bit. We're going to do roll call as well as the approval of the minutes. And after our distinguished guest is with us today, I'm beyond excited to have President Pollack with us today. We are going to structure the meeting in such a way that we will have our committees do reports for her and start off with that.
Okay.
Is that?
That's fine.
That was that, or we're gonna have these statements first.
Whichever you want. I have a hard stop at one.
At one. Perfect. Yeah. That's good to know. We're going to do quick committee reports for her, and then have her statements, and whatever time is allowed. There are all the pre-submitted questions that folks have had. So thank you to everyone on Zoom. Right now, we're looking to disable chat for right now. If you have questions, if we have time for questions that are not pre-submitted, we're going to do those in order by raising your hands, not doing those in chat. But before we get started, I just want to provide the land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayakono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gayakono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of the Gayakono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of the Gayakono people past and present to these lands and waters. Great. I think that was the way that we were looking to structure it, is to be able to provide some context for President Pollack with our committee reports. And we'll start first with our executive committee.
So yep, the executive committee has been arranging visits and schedules for the next few months. We've got some exciting people lined up, just don't have finalized their dates yet. We hope to have, I'm pretty sure we have Christine Lovely's forum with the staff. I think that'll be, I can't remember the exact date yet, because it's been in such discussion, but that's coming up as well. But I'll leave time for the rest of the committee that do a lot about it.
Perfect. Thank you, Marcy. Next up is our Communications Outreach and Recognition Committee, Jackie Krecky.
Hello. So Communications Committee has been primarily working on three areas this term: the eVoice newsletter, awards, and the priorities pool. So the eVoice tends to be more of a solo mission, but we do discuss it in our committee meetings, and I want to share that we redesigned it a little bit, and we've been focusing our content on EA meeting and committee materials as advised by University Relations. So we have some spotlights that highlight presentations at our meetings and our committee meetings. For the awards, we have three awards. The EA Appreciation Award is we just determined the winner, and we'll be announcing that at the President's Address on Monday. And this year we have two winners and we have one honorary mention. The other two are managed by Kristen Seferi, and the award for staff integrity and inclusion was just launched. They're planning on accepting nominations until February 15th, and that comes with a monetary prize. So we're hoping to have that wrapped up this semester pretty neatly. And we ended up moving the George Peter Award to the fall so that we didn't have all three awards done in this spring semester. And for the priorities poll, we did a lot of talking about this, and it's definitely been very different and a wonderful experience this year. We changed the poll to include comments for each of the priorities that we asked people to rank, and we got over 600 people ranking with hundreds more of comments. And the communications committee is currently working on how to best report out that data and figure out what to do after that, next steps after that. So I wanted to acknowledge Darren Borders and Hey DePew that have been helping champion those processes this semester. And that's pretty much all I wanted to cover for Quirk. Well, also I've been attempting to be more transparent and inclusive in my communication from the committee. So I've been sending out emails to the EA members and getting feedback, and I'm trying to get more engagement, and I'm hoping that has been successful and will continue beyond my term here.
Great. Thank you, Jackie. Next is the Education Committee. Unfortunately, Matthew Davis is not able to join us today, and we don't have any notes from him. I don't know if there's anyone else from the Education Committee, if they have any information that they would like to share.
We have been talking about employee degree options and making sure that people know about those options and marketing that better, but
great.
Nothing more specific.
Nothing's more specific than that. Perfect. Thank you, Kate. The next is the Employee Welfare Committee, and Christy Mahoney is not able to join us today, but we have a lot of updates. This is that committee that seems to have their hand in so many things. The items that she wanted to talk about and highlight are the continued partnership with HR, work life, DEI, talent management, workforce planning, and looking at issues of exploration of staff holiday and DEI considerations, staffing shortages, engagement challenges, and quiet quitting. They also are working extensively with CU Transportation Services, transit concerns, and TCAT cutbacks and the implications for CU staff, and increased complication for accessibility needs and the impact that has had. Flexible work arrangements and implications on permitting is something else that has been brought to the committee that they're working with folks on. We conducted a visioning session with Cornell Health and the Okanagan Charter. They're anticipating the results of the EA priorities poll and the belonging at Cornell survey and priorities slash initiatives for that committee. The latest engagement presentation was from Brandon Fortenberry from Dining and Daniel Lawnaker from CU Health on the expanded use of English translation devices in support of non-native English speaking staff. Very interesting and progressive work that's happening on that front as well. Future guests, the Office of Institutional Equity and Title IX will be coming to that particular committee in the next couple of months. And then finally, Marcy and Christy co-chair the CARE committee. Do you want to speak about that?
Sure, yeah. Christy and I are co-chairs of the Emergency Care Fund. She reminded me of what we've been doing. we meet every 2 weeks. We continue to make presentations to increase awareness and participation of funds. It appears that the staffing churn has impacted the level of contributors to the fund, and our focus will be to partner with the onboarding process to increase awareness and participation to all staff and faculty.
Great. The next committee that's Kit Tannenbaum is not able to join us today. She just provided a few things from the Benefits and Policy Committee, talking about analyzing the priorities poll data related to benefits and policy, and found top themes surrounding inflation / SIPs and desire to understand and use benefits better. 23% of the comments also expressed sentiments they are satisfied and to maintain benefits as is. Ideas have come up around how to better educate staff on benefits, such as micro forums on specific benefit topics, having Gordon Barger make a larger scale university presentation. Discussion on university committee release time for employees, and plans for future meetings to discuss proposed questions on amplifying the employee care fund and to discuss the Cornell adoption policy as it pertains to LGBTQIA employees. Harvard expanded its adoption policy to be more inclusive to families and second parent adoption, and thereby are wanting to learn if we can include that within the context of Cornell. And our last committee is Anise Staff Chaff, who was talking about our election coming up this spring.
Yes, and I do have a quick update. I circulated a draft calendar to my committee for their review, input, and approval by this Friday. Just a reminder to all of you on that committee. I shared the list of open terms for this upcoming election with the entire membership. The next item for the committee is to determine the communications plan. And I am in the process of setting up a Teams group so we can do it there. I think it'll be easier than to do it by email, although I'll do both. I'll get your input whatever way I can. And then the goal is for me to make a final report to the meeting on February 15th. This report will include the rules, the calendar, and the communication plan. I think that's it.
Great. Thank you very much, Anise. Before we turn everything over to President Pollack, I want to acknowledge that on the Zoom with us today is Christine Lovely. Christine was not able to join us in person, but there you are. We see you. And I think at that, we'll turn it over.
And can we go to the grid view up there? Because the whole point of being here was so that I could sort of see people.
See everybody. Yes, there you go.
Thank you. So hi, everybody. I wish I were seeing you in person, but I understand that there's all kinds of reasons why it's challenging to do that. I know that I will see most of you again next Monday at my annual address to staff. That's when I really get to share with you the highlights of our achievements as a university and all of the invaluable contributions that you make in service of that. So I'm going to save most of the headline items for that. I'm going to be brief and give just a few updates and then turn to a pretty fulsome set of questions that were provided in advance, and we'll see how many of them we can get through. I do want to give you a few leadership updates. So our new athletics director, Nikki Weber-Moore, joined us in Ithaca here last month. She is just amazing. I hope many of you get to meet her. She comes from Colgate University, where she was vice president and director of athletics. She holds a PhD in counseling psychology, and she just brings a really impressive record of leadership and vision for our pretty expansive athletics program here at Cornell. Second, Curtis Cole stepped into the new role of university-wide chief global information officer on January 1. They keep getting this wrong in my notes. He moved from his position of chief information officer at Weill Cornell Medicine. And in this position, Curt is going to be tasked with developing university-wide IT strategy. So one example is, how can we do a better job of sharing research data across our campuses? He's going to coordinate our IT resources, set clear principles, standards, and metrics for the oversight of IT, while ensuring that each of our campuses has the flexibility that they need to develop and support programs that are uniquely relevant to them. So, you know, what IT at in a medical center looks like is just naturally very different from an academic setting. And yet at some levels, it's identically the same. So how can we be more efficient and more effective, but at the same time allow for important differences? Kurt's going to be spending significant amount of time in Ithaca. In fact, he was here just a few weeks ago, right after he started, and I know he met with IT staff from across campus. We also have two major searches underway. One is for our new Dean of Weill Cornell Medicine to take the place of Augustine Choi, who returned to the faculty at the end of last year. And the other is for our new Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, who will take the place of Joanne DeStefano, who's retiring after 33 years of service and 15 of them as CFO. We're not gonna replace Joanne. There's no way to replace Joanne, but we have some very, very good candidates, and I'm looking forward to getting one selected and having them meet with all of you. And we're also delighted to welcome Mary Loffelholtz, who's the former Dean of the College of Professional Studies and a professor of English at Northeastern University, to come in as our new Dean of the School of Continuing Education, starting just next month, March 1st. A really top priority for her is going to be advancing plans for our new part-time online bachelor's degree program, providing pathways for non-traditional students to earn degrees at Cornell. This is really closely aligned, I think, with Ezra Cornell's founding commitment of providing an inclusive and accessible college education to any person. As usual, I want to share just a few academic updates to reflect our academic distinction. That, of course, is the hallmark of who we are as Cornell, and we couldn't do it without the staff. So just like a handful of the many, many things I could point to. We have a new grant of more than $1 million from the Mellon Foundation to support the Freedom on the Move. This is a collective digital history project that's going to be based here. We're partnering with multiple institutions, including Howard University's Department of History, to build a free and open archive of all the existing advertisements for quote unquote runaway slaves that were published in North American newspapers in the 18th and 19th centuries. The collection currently has about 32,000 such advertisements. They're estimated to be between 100,000 and 200,000 overall. Second, I'm really pleased to announce that Cornell will be leading a new $34 million research center to accelerate the creation of energy efficient semiconductor materials and technologies, and to create revolutionary new approaches to microelectronic systems. We always have to have a cool name. It's going to be called SUPREME, the Superior Energy Efficient Materials and Devices Center. Third, I am by training an AI scientist, but I don't have to speak from that perspective to say AI is our future. AI is impacting everything we do. And so our new university-wide AI initiative is ensuring that Cornell's an influential part of that future. But importantly, it's gonna be a part that builds on the way we think about things at Cornell. So we're gonna draw not only on our world-leading expertise in AI, but also on expertise we have across the campus to really shape and drive AI for a sustainable and equitable future. You know, years ago, more than 20 years ago, Cornell brought together its information science department and its computer science department, saying, what happens inside the machine in the network? You have to study that, but you ought to study that hand in glove with what the impact of computer science is on human beings and societies. And we've done that for many, many years, and we're now doing it university-wide in the AI initiative. I'll give you just one example of what we're doing. We have a new cardiovascular AI initiative. It's a collaboration between Cornell Tech, Bowers CIS College, Weill Cornell Medicine, and the Columbia University Vagelos College of Physicians and Scientists, so Columbia's med school. And what it's doing is it's applying AI and machine learning to a really, really large set of anonymized cardiac patient heart data so that we can begin to detect patterns that tell doctors who's likely to proceed to heart failure and who's not. And thereby, that will help physicians develop more informed care decisions and tailor treatments. Just three of many, many, many examples I can tell you of the really amazing path-breaking work that we're doing here and of which all of you are a part. So, as I said, I want to be brief because there were a lot of questions, and I'll just go through them and hopefully then there'll be time for a few other questions. Is that okay?
That sounds great. Thank you.
Okay. So the first question we got, well, not the first question, but the first question I'm going to answer is, what are my goals for 2023? And honestly, I don't necessarily have goals for individual calendar years. The board asks me for longer term strategic sorts of goals. We've got 20-ish minutes to answer more than a dozen questions. So again, I can't give this the full answer it deserves, but let me give you some of the highlights. First of all, student affordability and student access has been a fundamental goal for me since I got here. It's part of our Any Person ethos. We are raising money for it. We are increasing the number of students who come from lower and middle income families, and we're also reducing debt burdens for all our students. That's a very high priority. Second is faculty hiring. This, you know, academic excellence, as I've mentioned, that's our defining characteristics. And we need more faculty to keep up with the growth we've seen in the student body, and particularly in areas where there's enormous demand, computer science being one example of that. But we also need to make sure that we hire faculty who do what we do best. And what we do best is we draw on our breadth of expertise and our importance to engage in important interdisciplinary work. So the provost has authorized a number of positions and will continue to do so over the coming few years so that we can grow our faculty. Third are our new part-time and online degree programs. I mentioned that very briefly. I probably won't say a lot here unless you want me to, because I will be talking about it in my comments on Monday. We are still working to roll out the Racial Justice and Equitable Futures programs, both the course requirements and the center. Many of the schools have already rolled out the course requirements, so that's good. I will confess that getting the center up and running has taken us longer than we'd like, but we are actively in the process of finding a director for that. The search is underway, and when that happens, it will be full speed ahead. IT campus-wide must be a priority for us. Well-run IT, well-functioning IT is critical to any large organization. And I mentioned the hiring of our new Chief Global Information Officer a few minutes ago to help us take what is a really good program. What's that phrase? Good to great. We have a really good program, but we could be more strategic in what we do in the IT space, more coordinated. There's so many good ideas that our staff have, and I'm hoping, and I actually expect that Kurt will help us capitalize on that. Sustainability, of course, continues to be a high priority. I am very proud that we just, for the third time in a row, got the ASHI. ASHI is the American Association of Sustainability for Higher Education. And the platinum rating, we are the only institution to have gotten it three times in a row, one of the only ones to have gotten it three times at all. And actually not many universities have even gotten it once. So it is, I think, a real testament to our institutional commitment to sustainability. As I told you last fall, the borehole, you know, 2 miles down, we've done 2 miles down, and now we're testing what you can do down there. And then finally, we really need to build on our mission-driven goal of educating new educations of global leaders. And as part of that, we have got to find new ways to cultivate respect for and appreciation for free speech and to encourage a growth mindset in our students so that they can become the kinds of competent leaders that we need in the volatile and unpredictable future we're looking for. So that, in a nutshell, is my priorities. I don't know if you want me to stop and take questions on that answer before I go to the next. I don't want to just talk at people with this one.
So, are there any questions that are specifically related to this, the priorities that President Pollack just laid out? If there are, if you could just raise your hand, Jeremy.
More a comment than a question. I just wanted to really celebrate the arrival of Dr. Kurt Cole as our Chief Global Information Officer. As a member of CIT who has worked for years with applications that cross over into Weill Cornell, I think this is a fantastic step forward for Cornell. And I'm really excited to see how that develops. So thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy. I should add that Kurt's going to be a member of my cabinet. So we will have someone overseeing IT at the senior leadership table, making sure that that perspective is taken into account as we make decisions.
Oh, great. Okay. Jump in.
Yeah, so the next question is, given that COVID is now endemic, and it is, and something we will need to continue to live with, and it is, what are the next steps for the university and what is the role of staff? I hope everybody got a chance to read the all-community message that went out from my Kotlikoff, the provost, Lorraine Lombardi, and Christine Lovely just before the start of the semester outlining current measures. It is something we need to live with, but it's in flux. So we will continue to monitor it. We will look for new variants. We will look for changes in how it affects people. For now, given the current state of things, what we're asking is, first of all, to test if you're feeling sick. We have free antigen tests available to all students and employees. If you go, you know, just Google Cornell COVID, you'll see where all those sites are. And if you're positive, report it to the daily website. And if you're feeling sick, even if you test negative, please stay home, because we know that the antigen tests are, you know, not so good. And sometimes when I had COVID last fall, I tested negative for a few days and then bam, I'll tested positive, wildly positive. Also, we're not requiring masking, but it is a proven way to slow the spread of illness, not just COVID, but flu, RSV, something that's hitting children lower. So if you're in a crowd or you're in a poorly ventilated area, and especially if you're the one who's sick, if you have a cold or other symptoms, we strongly recommend, almost urge masking. We do need to respect one another's choices when it comes to masking, both their own choices and their health situations. That's what I have to say about COVID. Any other questions on COVID? Is that Jeremy? Are you
Jeremy?
Me again. So this again kind of comes from a personal place, but understanding that COVID is endemic and that masking is proven to reduce spread and infection. My concern is for folks with immunocompromised, or like myself, who directly gives aid to a family member who is immunocompromised. We are put in a position where we can no longer participate in a large number of Cornell events. One in particular that came up for me recently was a leadership program that was only available in person in an enclosed room with mask optional, which for my safety and the safety of my family eliminates me from participation. So I'm just interested in hearing about ways that we might develop our culture to provide access to everyone on our staff.
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. And it's a really tough question. And as you know, it's something that not just Cornell is dealing with, but the whole world is dealing with. I do think we're gonna have to think about ways to be flexible as we are here with hybrid meetings as appropriate. I think when the weather is nice, we can begin to have more outdoor meetings, which we know are infinitely safer. But you know, we live in Ithaca, we don't live in some place we can do that all year round. So I just think it's a really tough question, and I wish I had a better answer for you. Christine, did you want to add anything to that, or? No. Okay. Yeah, I said,
well, you know, that's a very good point, Jeremy, and certainly something that we can talk about, at least within human resources, about offerings that we do and whether or not we might be able to be a bit more flexible with some of the programs.
I you know, there's also a culture thing. I was on a plane a couple of weeks ago, and the person in the row just behind me was coughing his brains out. And I turned around and said, because this was true, I said, I'm on my way to visit my daughter who is like 9 months pregnant and going to have a newborn within the week. Would you mind wearing a mask? And he said, no, I'm not going to wear a mask. You wear a mask if you care. So there's nothing I could do, right? And, you know, so I do think we also need to try and have a culture. I mean, maybe we can't ask people to wear masks all the time, but I hope if someone were, you know, actively coughing and someone else said to them, I'm going to visit a newborn, or I'm taking care of my mom who's immunocompromised, that we as a community would respect that. But it's hard. Mm-hmm.
I will say, I think, Jeremy, I don't know which program you were referring to. Was it the HealthCraft that you were talking about?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. But I do wonder, I feel like the folks who work at organizational development are so amazing, and they're so skilled at navigating the hybrid situation of workshops. And I feel like those leadership opportunities are so precious to people that it could be really interesting to maybe just. And it wouldn't be, I know they talked about this last year when I did Turning Point. They rely so much on sort of like the tangibility of team building. Mm-hmm. But I do think it would mean a lot to people who didn't feel safe in person if there could be some sort of equivalent, because it is really like a pretty life-changing experience. So
I'm sure Christine, who oversees that, is taking notes on this and will. Okay, thank you. Next question, where are we with DEI? And how will DEI work and training be incorporated as a part of everyday life at Cornell? It already is. I mean, there's lots more to do, but we really have done an enormous amount of foundational work over the past 5 years to improve the campus climate, starting with the recommendations that came out of the Presidential Task Force that I stood up in 2017. Amongst other things, those led to the formation of the PAID group, the Presidential Advisors on Diversity and Equity, and the Belonging at Cornell initiative. I'm not going to sort of rattle off all the initiatives because that would take the rest of our time. They go from the enhanced IDP intergroup dialogue project program that we put in place for all of our new students, which I am so proud of that I brought the director of that to the board meeting just last week to share with the board what we were doing there and what the impacts were, to a six course DEI online certificate program for staff. And so, you know, rather than me rattling these off, I really encourage you to look at the diversity website to see the breadth of programs and initiatives. Our Belonging at Cornell initiatives are centered around the establishment of common objectives, common measurement and tracking, and community involvement, because this is not a problem that I can solve or the Pades can solve or Christine can solve. Ensuring that we're a community of belonging is a community responsibility. As part of that initiative, we are going to be reviewing the results from the 2022 university-wide employee survey. It was completed in November. The data, it's a pretty complex survey, so the data is still being compiled. And with these results, we're going to determine continued and new areas of focus for the schools and for the colleges. We've already got action plans at the college unit level, many of them, some of them are still being completed. We're going to execute them to address areas of concern that are surfaced in the survey. And to a large extent, we expect those to build on and extend to programs already underway. At the university level, we are executing a number of programs through the Inclusive Excellence Network, which I know many of you have participated in, which is, and I'm going to read this because I like the statement of purpose. It's designed to engage Cornell staff in action-oriented discussion, self-reflection, and productive discourse around topics that impact the workplace. Let me ask again, Christine, if she'd like to add to that.
Certainly, Martha. And I'll just reiterate that there's a lot that's already happening, and continuing to leverage what's already happening is value, including the six course advancing DEI training. Most colleges have now added DEI professionals to their staff in the past couple of years. So that's some significant progress there. Additionally, we're looking at the space where our workplace culture and belonging intersect. This is specifically in response to the portion of the question that talks about introducing this to our day-to-day existence on the campus. So there was a proposal to create a center of expertise on culture. And in the fall of 2022, the co-chairs of this committee, Kathy Berkren and Sonia Rucker, convened four focus groups with staff across the campus. And what the all staff focus group shared their thoughts about were how we would define Cornell's current culture, ways we could make the culture better, ways we could better support staff in their goals to advance in their careers, and incentives to retain staff. So really looking at the feedback that we're getting from our focus groups and actually operationalizing this into our approaches is pivotal. And hopefully everyone's heard about the additional efforts that are coming out of our internal mobility and career success area. If not, spend some time on the website. There's just so many valuable resources that are available around advancing our careers, because that's one of the things that kind of came out of the feedback that we've gotten from staff.
Great. I'm going to jump around in the questions because, well, you wouldn't know what order I had them in anyway. Yeah. But I have one that I know is of great interest to people, so I'm going to jump ahead to that one. And that says, with inflation on the rise, can we expect a SIP in the coming fiscal year that will aim to address the rising cost of living? So the short answer is yes, but let me give you more detail. I mean, first of all, we are relieved. We're very relieved that inflation is not continuing to rise. In fact, it's coming down, and it's coming down quickly. But we know that the inflation rate of the past 6 to 8 months has been a real challenge, and addressing it has been the number one priority in our budgeting. You heard me, I was probably here, but at least some of the other assemblies last semester asked me about a swimming pool. And my answer was, I can't talk about a swimming pool right now. I need to put what resources I have into faculty and staff salaries. Salaries are by far our largest outlay at Cornell. Even a small increase percentage-wise has a tremendous impact on our bottom line. And I'm going to be real honest here. As much as I want to, I'm not going to be able to raise salaries to fully match the rate of inflation that it was at its peak. I can't cover that with an increase in tuition, which is what would cover the differences. But A, we are absolutely going to have higher than average SIP increases this year. In fact, the SIP increase is going to be higher than the increase in university revenues. It is going to put pressure on our budget, but I feel very strongly that that's just necessary for the well-being of our staff. So that's what we're going to do. And really importantly, I think, because that increase won't come until the summer and our staff are living with higher expenses now, we're also going to be paying a mid-year bonus to our lower staff this month on a sliding scale based on income. It will go to all full-time or part-time regular non-bargaining unit staff, librarians, archivists, instructors, lecturers, extension research teaching associates, and vet intern residents and senior residents who have been employed at Cornell at least since the 1st of January, 2023, and who earn a full-time annualized base salary of up to $99,999. If you earn $50,000 or less, you're going to receive a lump sum of $1,000 subject to the usual taxes and deductions. And if you earn more, you'll receive less on a sliding scale with a minimum bonus of $500. It will be paid on the 15th or the 16th of this month, depending on your pay schedule, so on your next deposit. Again, we realize this doesn't entirely solve the problem, but we are trying, as always, to do the best we can do, balancing our responsibility to our students, which are would be the source of the revenue, and what we want to, and the responsiveness we want to exhibit towards staff. Should I take questions on that?
You saw claps. To be able to do, are there any questions, comments related to that? Anyone? Aside from the claps that we've seen?
So watch out in your next paycheck for some more money.
Yes, Wendy.
Hi, everyone. Hi, President Pollack and Vice President Lovely. Thank you for joining us. I'm just wondering, for that mid-year bonus, have staff and faculty that are eligible to receive it been notified about that?
Have staff and faculty what been notified?
Been notified.
I don't think
Christine,
so. Yeah.
Christine can address it. She'll be sending them.
Okay, Christine.
Yeah, no, our timeline for that is later this month in the next few days, actually, those notices are going to go out. So there's a need with this sort of information to be completely accurate. So that work is taking place right now. And then appropriate notifications will go out.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm trying to, what's the only time?
I've got about 5 minutes left.
Okay, let me ask one that is very important to me, and that is, what are your thoughts about efforts in some states like Florida to curtail academic freedom and restrict teaching of subjects that are a vital concern to our society? I think these kinds of efforts are incredibly dangerous. I think they're dangerous to academia, and I think they're dangerous to democracy. You know, academic freedom, which is the ability of university faculty to choose what and how they teach, is just absolutely fundamentally essential to the functioning of academic institutions and to our progress as a society. If faculty are restricted in what they can teach, then students are restricted in what they can learn. And if, as a society, we don't give each new generation of scholars the ability to explore their disciplines and share that exploration and knowledge with their students, then we can't move forward. Now, there's another whole discussion I could go into about the critical importance of free speech more broadly, not just academic freedom of faculty. Also something that's under attack, and quite honestly is under attack from both ends of the political spectrum. This is not a matter of the left or the right. I also find attacks on academic freedom to be incredibly dangerous. Free speech to be incredibly dangerous. And we're working actually quite diligently on programs that might help us address this for our student body. Do you want me to do one more question? Do you want to take the question? What do you want to do?
Why don't we do one more and then we'll open it up. And then the next.
Okay, I'm going to kick the next one, the last of the pre-submitted ones to Christine, because this is one that comes up. Child care for working parents in Ithaca is very expensive and hard to come by. Has Cornell been working on any ideas of lessening this financial strain and pressure for employees with children?
And yeah, this is one where I had to be educated a bit. As you all know, I'm pretty new around here, but I did learn that we've actually seen a huge reduction in available workers since the pandemic. So that's part of the challenge that exists. You know, we're being driven by a number of realities, including wages, increased interest in remote work, and need for flexible hours and the like. So this talent shortage is impacting area providers, including Cornell Child Care Center. So in terms of cost, the Cornell Child Care Grant Program is available to employees, and nearly 500 applications were approved for the 2023 calendar year. But this program, it does have federal limitations that restricts the maximum annual award to $5,000 per family. So human resources made adjustments to the program during the pandemic to improve ease of the application process and increase flexibility of application timing. So we'll continue to look at ways to improve that program. Also want to make folks aware that the New York State Department of Social Services has expanded the eligibility for their support. So employees should contact their county Department of Social Services if they want to determine eligibility that might be available for them there. Also want to share, in case anyone didn't know, that we do offer a free membership to care.com to benefits eligible staff, and staff can use that resource to find help with child care as well as other care assistance like pets and house sitting and the like. So definitely a thorny topic, not an easy one by any measure, but we are doing what we can as a university to try and address this important topic.
Great. Any last burning questions for President Pollack or Christine Lovely today?
One minute left.
Bethany.
I will be so fast, and I know that Christine already heard me ramble about this at our breakfast with her, but I would just love to keep sort of pinging this idea that I think it would be incredible if there could be a more, I don't want to say decentralized because that's like a hot button word, but a more widely spread presence of organizational development in institutions like the library, which are big and sort of multi-lined enough that I think I was there for the last 5 years. I just think it would be amazing to have maybe more of a presence of a sort of outside, really skilled person or people who would work with people in the library who are passionate about that kind of work to make sure that the structures and communications and leadership had as much help as they could. So I just want to keep pinging that.
Thank you. And we could put that in the answer. Perfect.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you all. Please come on Monday and you can listen to me blather on for much longer.
Thank you very much. All right. Thank you all who were able to hang on and do that. I know we're going to lose some people. Okay. At this point in time, we will do a roll call.
Yep. Darren Borders. Marcus Brooks was here. He just emailed me. He had to leave. So he was here. Justin Chandler. Stacy Coyle. Stacy here?
Yeah.
Yes. I saw him. Carl Cornell.
Here.
Jackie Creakey. Yep. Hey DePew. Bethany's here. Adrian Durant. Brenda Fisher. Andrea's here. Deb Howell. Ellie Crum. We saw Jeremy Cruiser. Michelle Leparco. Christy. Yeah,
she's here.
She is here. Okay. Christine Mahoney.
She's here.
I'm here.
And Alan Mittman.
Alan was having problems connecting.
Okay. So here.
Yeah.
Okay. Alina O'Connor.
Yeah.
Here.
Kevin Phipps.
Here.
Stephanie Rizzou.
Here.
Benny Schacht?
Here.
Wendy Treat?
Present.
And Lisa Zacharias?
Here.
So given everyone, we've lost a few, but I do believe we have quorum.
Yes.
So given the fact that we have quorum, we have approval of the minutes. It looks like we don't have the January 18th meeting minutes. Is that correct?
Which should be available by Friday to circulate. We're just finishing.
We're finishing those up. So we are asking for approval of the minutes from November 16th, 2022. We approved December's last month, but the November was outstanding. Do I have a motion to approve?
Kate? Motion to approve.
Oh, Kate, second. Wendy, can we have you second? Great. Perfect. The one thing I wanted to have a quick conversation about is Monday is the president's address to staff. There will be a number of people actually in person at that. I know there's going to be those of us that are able to do the blended and take comments because there are no pre-submitted questions, but there, if you had questions that you submitted that were not asked today, certainly we can continue to have those questions raised if you would like. I would like to get a sense if anybody is planning on coming in person that was not here today. If you are, please let me and Marcy know so that we can plan effectively the support for Eric and for Jessica, set up and everything that we have to be able to and usher.
Is this an ask that you're needing people to come in person?
Yes. Yeah. I'd like.
Okay. I will be there in person.
I would like to have more people in person if we can, just to help. At the space, but also to help act as ushers.
Do you need support for setup? If we could make it maybe 15, 20 minutes early?
I think, yes, that would be really helpful because okay. We do have water, we have snacks, we have other things that we've been able to do that. Yes, if it includes water and snacks, Carl is in, right?
We also have, I don't know if we'll have the ability to, if people are in the room, to, we'll have microphones to ask questions.
And to move around.
Right. So anyone who's there in person, we might ask you to do that. Wear your red shirts if you feel comfortable. I don't know if I will, but.
Can I wear a red dress? There you go.
For those of us who are new and may not have a red shirt.
Oh, yes. We did have red shirts that were extra from Ellen Chase, but I don't, or Ellen, not Ellen Miller. Chase.
Miller. I don't know.
Did she ever provide those to you, Jackie? No? Okay. I don't know.
In the office, I think the office has any of that. When do you have the answer to that?
We have a box of mixed polos, all sizes.
Okay.
So I can't promise any close fits, but we do have some choices.
Then we'll have that, and you can do a quick change in the bathroom.
Sounds good. I'll show up a little early for that.
Perfect.
I'll Wendy? Be there in person.
Awesome. Okay, great. Wendy?
I don't have a red shirt either, but I have a red shirt that doesn't say employee assembly, but I'll wear it. I plan on being there from 11:30 to 1:30, so whatever you need done. I can help out with.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you. So I think that was the big ask, is to make sure that we have a sense of folks. And obviously, as always, for as many years as I've been on the EA, it's always been this blended hybrid of in-person and not. Wendy, did you have a follow-up? Okay. Your hand was still raised. Perfect. That sounds good. The next items on our agenda was liaison reports.
I didn't know if anyone had, Jackie, if you have anything from Faculty Senate.
They have not met yet.
Okay. All right. And any other liaison? Christy and I serve on the campus planning committee. We did have one meeting that talked about sustainability and different things that are happening. I can provide a much more comprehensive report at the next meeting, and as well as blend in the next meeting that's associated with that. Have we enabled chat, Eric? Okay,
send it.
Okay. So just remember, chat is not part of the official record, but if anyone wanted to do that, we just were trying to eliminate that for questions coming into President Pollack so that we could manage that effectively. And at this point in time, I have 108. Here's an opportunity for some open discussion. If anybody had any questions, anything they wanted to discuss.
Could one of you just give me sort of a reminder of what the president's address to staff will be like as far as our involvement with it?
The question is just staff involvement at the actual.
Yeah, like what you would like the EA staff to.
It's helping to set up and organize and just be there to help usher folks welcome the president along with the rest of us.
Okay.
To talk about, Marcy will be on her computer and will be the direct person to capture questions from that. But as Marcy had also indicated, if there are people in the room, and I hope we have some people in the room if they chose to be able to do it, we don't want people asking questions without a mic.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to pass around a mic so that we'll need folks to be able to do that.
And are we in charge of the sort of tech stuff and troubleshooting, or is there someone who will be there doing that?
CIT, Matt Gordy and his team are going to be setting up.
That was
we'll have remote live.
In my department, we are in charge of that for like months, and so it is scary.
Yeah, no, there's a guy.
There's a guy.
Person, I don't know.
Multiple people. Yeah.
But no, they run the show. And also, it's a presence, just an EA presence. If there are people that are in person, just to, you know, just to show EA, especially with the elections coming up, just to spread the word of the EA and what we do.
Okay. And I think it'll be great that we've got two people or groups receiving the EA Appreciation Award. And so I think that's just going to be really exciting to have folks there.
So just a breakdown, just a quick, the first 15 minutes are Andrea gives her welcome. There's the awards are announced and given out. So that's the first 15 minutes. And then the other 45 minutes is all Martha and questions.
Yeah, she'll have comments that she'll make, and then we'll take a question to be able to do it. And we will end promptly at 1.
Okay.
Wendy.
Yeah, I just have a quick question, and apologies if I'm just being kind of ignorant about it, but who determined who's getting the appreciation award? I thought in the past it had been voted on by the entire employee assembly, and I only just saw the file in box. So was it the communications committee that voted on who won it, or how did that work out?
I thought it went to everyone.
Yeah,
I didn't get anything to vote.
I sent out the votes to the EA man list, so it's possible you weren't on the EA members man list, which I apologize if that is the case, but I did send out the information. I'll forward that to you after the meeting. That's unfortunate.
No, I'm just curious, when did you send that out? Because I've been on the mail list basically since December, so
I did see the file and box of the three nominees, but I just didn't see anything of who was the, you know, who the vote, anything.
So I sent out an email. Let's see, I think we
last Friday?
Was there accepted Friday? Nomination until the Friday before. I'll have checked, but I've been sending out multiple emails with updates on that. So if it might be that you're not receiving my emails or something else is
did it go to the on. Okay, so here I go back to my days in the Office of the Assembly. Did it go to the EA voting members listserv? Because everyone that is an EA voting member should be on that listserv.
I sent to OA-EA member, I want to say.
Yeah, you did. It was sent on Thursday, the 26th at 2:32 was the reminder. And the first email was on Friday. 1:20 or Friday the 20th at 5 o'clock or 5:30.
And you should be on that one when you, like you said, you've been on it for a bit.
Yeah, Jackie just put it in there. OA dash EA dash members.
Yeah, I'm looking right now to see if I'm on that. And if I'm not on that, I'll just follow up with the Office of the Assembly to make sure that I'm on it.
Additionally, a lot of staff members are finding that their emails are going into spam folders every now and then. So I would just double check there as well.
Thanks. I do check my spam every day because I have mail that goes there as well. And I literally, honestly, did not receive anything for the for voting for anything.
Wendy, I just sent the list of open seats this morning to that list. Did you see that one?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
I'm not getting anything. Like I said, I'll follow up with the Office of the Assemblies and make sure that I'm where I'm supposed to be.
I apologize for that. It's disappointing. Just because we appreciate your feedback and everyone's feedback. So we want to make sure that things are going to everybody. Especially like again, Anissa indicated the information that she's put together is just it's very well organized, Denise. I appreciate that very much. Letting people know what seats are up, what seats are open, and the timing for that, as well as your plans for communication for this term, because I think that's our big business for the next few months is to really get our seats filled and allow us to continue to facilitate the ongoing involvement of everybody as best we can. Any other questions? Thank you for participating today. I think it was great and President Pollack seems to roll with it about, yes, we are, this is a perfect example of hybrid, people in the room, people not. And we'll have to remember next time she wants coffee. She was looking for some coffee. We didn't have that.
Next meetings will be in.
Yes. So we're talking about this, it just looking at participation. It looks as if we will have our meetings from here on all in a Zoom format. It's one of those things. I know some people would like them in person and some people would like that to keep the hybrid open just for planning purposes and consistency and hopefully facilitating better participation. It looks like that's going to be the direction that we need to go in. So I just wanted to let folks know that more information will become available to be able to do that. So any questions about that?
I had discussed a guest speaker wanting to meet in person for March 1st. So I know there was discussion about having in-person exception for when we have guest presenters. So I just wanted to know where that landed.
Yeah, I mean, if people don't come, my thought, I'm sorry to just jump in. Other than exec committee members, there are two EA members here today. And if people aren't going to come when Martha Pollack presents, people aren't going to come, right. is my thought. And it's better, it's a more level playing field if we're all on Zoom than if we have a few people here in the room with the presenter. It's not as good of an experience for the presenter if most people are on Zoom and you're in person.
Right.
It's better for everybody to be on Zoom. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, people like the in-person option, but as someone who has come to most of the in-person meetings, and it's not just the delicious free food, it's also close to my office, to be perfectly honest. People are coming. So, I don't know. The evidence is not there to support having it be in-person for presenters.
Yeah.
Because Martha actually said before she started, gosh, it would have been better if I was on Zoom.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She said that herself.
Yeah.
It would have been a better experience. I could see people better if I was just on Zoom myself as a presenter. So,
unless people are going to come, but as I say, if people didn't come today, my guess is they're not showing up.
Right.
All right. We are at 1:18. I guess we could call for adjournment.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Seconded.
But Wendy and
second.
Thank you so much. Take care, everybody.
Stay warm.
Yes.